My name is Peter Austin from the School of Oriental and African Studies. Let me just give you some explanation of a little bit of background about this particular colloquium. It's a colloquium on language documentation and dictionaries, and it was set up and organized by Sarah Ogilvy, who is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Cambridge. Sarah has a major project to look at the role of dictionary making within the field of language documentation, and she has sort of set this up and organized this particular colloquium. Unfortunately, Sarah has come down with an extremely severe case of influenza, and she's been in hospital and has just got out of hospital and is recuperating at home. I got an email from her this morning to say that she wishes that nobody would have to suffer what she's suffering at the moment. So, unfortunately, Sarah can't be here, and she's asked me to essentially chair in her place. It seems like disasters are striking dictionary making around the world, because the colleagues, Nick Tieberger, and who was meant to give one paper in this session, is unable to come for personal reasons, and his replacement, Simon Musgrave, is unable to come because his house has been flooded in Australia. So, but as lexicographers, we will no doubt continue valiantly forward. So what we have decided to do is that we will present the four presentations that were originally scheduled in sequence of first myself, then Gabby will talk about her work in the Marquesas. That brings us to the lunch break, and following that, we'll have Andrew talking about his project in California, and the final presentation will be John's discussion about the WISE system. And then we'll take, that'll tie up the colloquium. It means we'll finish a little early, but some of you will see that there are five or six alternatives for you to pursue at that point. So we will encourage you to go and do that. So basically what we'll try and do is have half hour presentations, the regulation 10 minutes between them, which you can use for your calisthenics or to go visit the bathroom or whatever it is that you want to do. And then we'll start the next colloquium. So is that okay with everybody? We're sort of in a disaster recovery mode here, but hopefully we can present some interesting materials for you to about the lexicography issues and language documentation. So Andrew's going to flash the timing cards when I get over time. So I guess I'll just kick off, and then we'll move to Gabby's presentation. Okay, so... see, well, that clock is reminding me anyway. So, okay, so my my presentation is about issues in the creation of a trilingual dictionary for Sasak in eastern Indonesia. This is a project that I've been concerned with for the last, primarily for the last 10 years or so. And what I'm going to really raise are some of the problems and challenges that we've been trying to confront, to give you a few hints about some ways in which we have been attempting to deal with those, and point to some future developments that we are thinking about in terms of moving forward. So our overall goal is to create a trilingual Sasak Indonesian English dictionary. And one that will be of practical use to speakers who live on the island of Lombok in central Indonesia. And in doing so, what we wanted to develop are ways to deal with what I will show you are, I think, very complex individual geographical and social variation in the language. And we need to do this in a way that is politically acceptable. That is, a way in which we can create a dictionary that people will, in the community there, will accept and then adopt and use. So I'm going to cover sort of four areas, give you a little bit of outline about Sasak, introduce language variation, mention a couple of approaches that have been taken in previous work, and then outline the ways that we're doing things at the moment and things that we might look at doing in the future. So this is a map of the Republic of Indonesia and the island of Lombok, which is where I've been doing my research, is roughly in the middle there, immediately to the east of Bali. This is a shot from the space shuttle showing you the sort of physical layout of Lombok. Interesting feature here is the second highest mountain in Indonesia, Gunung Rinjani volcano, still active volcano sitting in the top there, which means that large part of Lombok, roughly half of it, is extremely difficult to inhabit. The scale here is roughly, as you can see, about 60 kilometers by 60 kilometers, and there's well over 3 million people living in this space, primarily in the plain, which is to the south of where the volcano is. This is really important when we come to language, because what we will find is that there's very high densities of populations and hundreds of villages scattered throughout this area. A little bit of quick background about history, which will help you understand some of the issues that I'll mention later. Lombok was part of the Majapahit Javanese kingdom from the 14th century onwards, and was Islamicized very early in the 16th century, starting in the east. In the 17th century, the Balinese Karangasem kingdom invaded and subjugated the Sasaks, and that domination continued for 200 years. And this is really linguistically very important, this contact from the outside. In the 19th century, the Dutch, on the pretext of saving the poor Sasaks, came in and attacked the Balinese. So you've had waves of Javanese, Balinese, Dutch involvement. And then finally, in the 20th century, there was a period of occupation by the Japanese, and then back to Javanese domination with the Republic of Indonesia being established. The population, as I said, roughly 3 million on the island, about 90% of whom identify as ethnic Sasaks. Sasak is spoken by the majority of the population across the island, but it is we have a kind of diglossic situation where it is really restricted to family and village domains. It has no formal status. There is no literacy. For most speakers, no literacy functions. There is a small amount of literacy which we see now happening with emails and also Facebook. There's a Sasak Facebook site that's got a couple of thousand people who submit posts in Sasak. But generally, for most speakers, it's not a language that you write. If you want to write something, you write Bahasa Indonesia, the national language, the language of education, the media, government, business, literacy, status. If you want to get a job, get ahead, you better learn to speak Indonesian. There is an ongoing language shift that seems to be beginning with a strong rural-urban split. So people who live in the cities, very strong tendency for them to speak Indonesian to their children, even between married couples where both speakers of Sasak. Out in the villages, the language is still very much alive. It is not an endangered language. It has 2.5 million fluent speakers, but it is potentially, because of this rural-urban shift split and the potential shift, there is some potential there for language loss. Okay, in terms of the language situation on Lombok, we have Sasak, as we'll see, itself a variegated state of affairs. Bahasa Indonesia, I mentioned, the dominant high language. The third language that plays a role here is Kawi. This is a version of 17th century Javanese, and that exists as the literary language, which is used in text, poetry, music, and drama. So if you go to a theatre performance, but the chances are you will hear Kawi spoken there. Sasak itself shows wide regional variation, which has been documented due to Dutch sources from the 19th century. And I'm in a very fortunate situation that two colleagues have done thorough dialect research. A Dutch colleague did some work in 1948, and we have another dialect survey that was done by a local scholar, Mahsun, some 50 years later. So I'm in the very fortunate position of having two detailed dialect surveys 50 years apart. Sasak also has striking social variation. Like Balinese, their neighbours Balinese, and also the Javanese, there are speech levels in Sasak, distinguishing basically between Bahasa Kasar, the ordinary everyday language, and Bahasa Alus, the polite language, which itself is heavily influenced by Javanese and Balinese through lexical choice. So I'm going to outline to you six challenges that we are confronted with in doing a dictionary, a trilingual dictionary of Sasak. The first of these is the dialect variation, which I'll outline for you. The second is variation which is not recognized by speakers as having to do with dialects, but is strikingly variable in terms of the phonology. The third challenge are semantic differences that we find in the data. The fourth challenge is the existence of the speech levels. And the fifth challenge is the existence of language contact. As I hope you saw, language contact goes back to the 14th century. So we have layers and layers and layers of contact that need to be confronted within our lexicographic research. And the final challenge is, how do we make this all work in terms of community involvement and acceptance of the kind of dictionary that we might produce at the end? Sasak speakers recognize five ethno-linguistically named varieties. They call them by shibboleth terms. The terms that mean like that and like this are used in order to identify them. And they will give you rough geographical locations of where these five dialects are spoken. So the people who say ngano for like that and ngene for like this are called ngano ngene. Mano mene in central Lombok. Ngato ngate in northeast Lombok. Kuto kute around Bayan to the north side of the volcano, also called ngano mene. And mriak mriku in the south central Lombok. If any of you have seen the beautiful pottery, the dark pottery that comes from Lombok, that's from the Mriak Mriku speaking area. The problem is, this doesn't actually exhaust the forms that you find on the ground. So when you go and do research and record people speaking, you also find people who say Manu Mni for like that and like this. So near the town of Gunti, where I've done quite a bit of research. And there's a whole pile of other ones. So these are really shibboleth terms, which are kind of ideological positions that Sasak speakers take that say there are five of these varieties and you can tell where they're located. In fact, the correspondences relate to the five Sasak kingdoms that were destroyed by the Balinese invasion. So our challenge is that how do we deal with dialect difference? Because when you ask speakers, they characterize the dialect differences by pointing to lexical divergences. You can basically tell pretty quickly when somebody is speaking to you in Sasak where they come from, because you just need to pay attention to things like the clitic pronouns, the aspect markers, the odd prepositions, and a few lexical items. So people will tell you, you can say, for the future marker will, gin, gun, ea, ya, ja, a, and, you know, with those correlations. So Maria Mariku people will say a. That's the sort of correlation. The preposition meaning to is ojok, jok, aning, timpa, ngaro. The second person clitic pronoun has all of these variant forms, and so on. However, dialect surveys that were done over this 50-year time span show that these were done at the village level. So Andreas Tew, I mean, utterly remarkable. I actually had the opportunity to meet him a couple of years ago. He's still alive in his 90s. He was in Lombok in 1948. Can you imagine what it was like after the Japanese had been defeated, but Lombok was not yet part of Indonesia because there was resistance within the city, within the island. famine was widespread, and he got on his bicycle, literally rode from village to village, collecting dialect material. This shows us that there are no clear geographical distributions. You cannot draw isoglosses, because what you get is the verb to bite, for example, looks like that. At least 20 different lexical forms spread in a pattern all over the island. you see I've marked the volcanoes. So the reason you get those blanks in the top there is because that's where the volcanic area is. So that's the verb to bite. This is the word, that the adjective which means wide, which has a very different distribution. This is another lexical item that our colleague Mahsun has recorded. If you look at, say, 100 vocabulary items, there's no way in which you get a simple correlation that allows you to draw isoglosses. Basically, every village has its own set of lexical forms, and including things like prepositions and the pronominals. So, second challenge, there is phonological variation. Previous studies, particularly the work by Theo and so on, and my research with speakers across the island, have shown that even where people say they speak the same dialect, there's massive phonological variation. So if you ask people, how do you say nose, you'll get irung, 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 irung. These are phonemically contrastive vowels. Tokol, tokol, the verb to sit. Variation between a, the letter e here indicates a schwa. So a, e, and o. The word for I is mata, 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 moto, and so on. There's consonant variation. Final R and H vary. Final glottal stop and H vary. Medial R and zero vary. So the word for nose, the full set, is actually irung, 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 iung, as all of the different possibilities. So as soon as somebody says, actually, iung, you can more or less say, oh, that's in such and such an area. Catch a few more words and you can pretty well nail them down to which village they come from. Okay, challenge three. A given form has differences in referential and predicational meaning depending on the location. And probably the most extreme of this is deictic terms. So if you ask people, how do you say south, translate the Indonesian word for south, you'll get barat, bat, daya, daya, lau, and bongkot. In fact, turns out that there are four different deictic systems in operation. Basically, you have to know whether you're heading towards the volcano or towards the ocean, and then which side of the island you're on. And you have a flip of the deictics. So north and south, what you would think of as north and south for English speakers, flips around depending on which side of the volcano, and east and west also flip depending on which part of the island you're in. There are also subtle semantic differences in other lexical fields, and we've only really just begun to explore those. Once you go beyond, you know, what's the word for dog, what's the word for man, you start exploring lexically, you find that actually it turns out to be there are quite subtle differences between varieties. Okay, challenge number four is how to deal with speech levels. Politeness is encoded through lexical basic vocabulary, so open class and closed class items. So we had mata, muta, moto, etc. before, but alongside that you have penuntung, which is the mid-level form, penyerminan, which is the high-level form. In addition, for a number of items, there are honorific and humble forms. So if I wish to honor the person I'm speaking to, I use the honorific, and to humble myself and my family, I would use the humble form. So take a few basic vocab terms like the verb to eat or the verb to see, and you get these kinds of distributions. You'll see it's not at all regular, however, because if you look at a few more verbs, you find there are gaps and holes throughout the different areas. Essentially, and I'm willing to defend this, every semantic area, every lexical item has a different pattern. And you simply have to learn, does this form have a mid form or an honorific or a humble and so on to find them out. And those of you who know Indonesian languages will see that the high and the honorific forms here are actually borrowings from Balinese and from Javanese. Look at some nouns, and again you find, you know, eye has three, but hand has got two. Why is that the case? What is it about your head that's different from your hand, etc.? The way that I've had to work on this is literally go lexical item by lexical item, trying to uncover these things. So how do we deal with all of that huge variation in terms of the dictionary? Okay, challenge five is through language contact. Kawi, as I mentioned, is 17th century Javanese. Well, it's not just restricted to the literary language, it's also used for hyper-politeness. So if you, the high language form for giving an apology is nurgur, but if you want to be extremely polite, you would use the Kawi form, ampurur. So although this is the literary language, it still has a very active role in terms of hyper-politeness expression. And again, one wants to incorporate that into any account of modern Sasak lexicon. The language is full of borrowings. The communities were Islamicized in the 16th century. There is a massive amount of Arabic. People's names are essentially Arabic, tend to be Arabic ones, the words for days of the week. In the Ngono-Ngene variety, there is a contrast between masculine and feminine in the second person, only in that variety, and the masculine pronoun is a loan from Arabic, the feminine one being the historical one. So all of this material has to be included in the dictionary as well. Challenge six for us is the challenge of sociology and politics. If the language variation wasn't enough, we have social variation with a set of social castes. The vast bulk of the population belong to the third caste, Jaja Karang, the commoners, but roughly 6% of the population belong to the Menak caste, who are the high group in this community. They are the descendants of the people who were associated with the Balinese and the Sasak court. So they're only a tiny population, 6% of the whole population. However, they wield enormous political and social power on Lombok. Contemporary society is built around a sort of Indonesian ethos of modernism and education and attainment, but traditional values, caste-related values, things like land ownership, marriage ceremonies, and so on, are very much the area of adat, or traditional knowledge, and the Menak, who are 6% of the population, have a very dominant and important role. So a few years ago in Indonesia, there was an opportunity in schools for local languages to begin to be taught, and some textbooks in Sasak were developed. It was Menaks who actually wrote the textbooks for Lombok. And interestingly, page 3 of the kindergarten textbook has high-level language, low-level language presented for those children to learn and to incorporate. There are several previous dictionaries of Sasak. Choris 1938, in the interest of time, I don't really have time to go through this and present them to you, but basically what he did was he chose one dialect and included a bunch of cross-references to the other varieties. So this slide shows you. So you see on the right-hand side, you'll see Irung equals Idung. Well, that's the word for nose that we mentioned before. The way he's doing it is just say, I'm going to choose one Irung and then list the others as variants. And you can see how he's indicated the Arabic borrowings there on the left-hand side and so on. So his approach was take one variety and make that the sort of dictionary language and include a few notes on the other. Another dictionary that was produced by a Sasak researcher, Nazir Toyer, unfortunately only includes data on Ngeto Ngete, which is his own dialect, so he just simply ignored all of the others. Nell Staff, a researcher, did a dictionary of Sasak about 10 years ago, and she adopted what I call the midden approach. You know, middens are the piles of shells and garbage that are left where, that are, you know, at campsites and so on. And so basically what Nell Staff did in her approach was to simply throw everything, absolutely everything, together. And so if you look at her dictionary, it's simply a list of words, and you can't tell where does this word come from, who spoke it, etc., etc. So that's the sort of garbage bag, grab bag type of approach, which Staff adopted in her the way that she sort of dealt with it. Okay, so what are we doing? How are we sort of approaching this? What we have decided is that since there is no kind of standard version of Sasak, and because there would be extreme political issues in relation to choosing one variety and or one even one village or one area as being the kind of standard one that you would put in a dictionary, we have to include everything. Users want us to include as much variation as possible with lots of cross-referencing of all sorts of types, social, geographical, stylistic, loans. So the way that we've attempted to resolve this is to provide metadata about where every individual lexical item comes from. In the database, which I'll show you in a second, the identity of the speaker that we have recorded the data from and the person who wrote it down is included for every lexical item and for every single sentence. I have a database of 10,000 lexical items, and I can tell you exactly which village every one of these is associated with. I've also got a text database of many thousands of sentences, and every single sentence is coded for the speaker and the recorder. So in the toolbox files that I use, the metadata for speakers and recorders is included for every sentence. So that allows me to pull examples out for individual speakers. So let me just quickly show you the database entry for... this is the word nose.
Can you see that?
So there are 13 entries for nose, and you'll see chungu, which... This is not a display format. This is my working format for looking at the data. So what you'll see is a whole list of names of speakers down the left there and names of recorders. Chunguk is probably a loan from Balinese. And here we have Eidong, Erong, Eirung, Eidong, Eidong, Eirung. And the individual speakers who gave those are all indicated in the database. And a similar kind of approach we take with all of the text data. So that's where we're at the moment. This enormous database, 10,000 items, every single item with metadata associated with where it comes from. And that means that now I can actually, if I wish to, I can actually put this together in terms of looking at aggregations. So, hang on, let me see. Okay, so let's just have a look at an example of an aggregation. We can actually look at the database in terms of the villages. We have data from 263 different villages, and for each of those you can pull up the lexical items. So I've given you, on the board you can see for the village of Kakaite, here's a list of lexical items, and on the right-hand side, the particular feature. So, you know, R and zero correspondence or final glottal stop or whatever. Okay, so the database contains the possibility of us looking at individual speakers or at aggregations of speakers according to the villages that they're associated with. And what we would like to do in the future is to explore the use of this on mobile devices, including new platforms for potential dictionary development. So some of you may know of Wunderkammer, which is a mobile phone dictionary system developed by some linguists in Australia. I was in Lombok in July last year and discovered there is now 3G coverage over the whole of the island. So we can we could actually have our dictionaries available on mobile phones. In addition, what we plan to do is to GPS code the lexicon here, so that if you're working with a smartphone or a tablet computer like an iPad or the new Android ones coming out, they could actually know where you are on the island, and you could therefore pull up the dictionary for that particular location where you are. So as you go from village to village, the tablet knows where you're physically located, and what you'll see is the dictionary. So the lexicon is comprehensively tagged for all of the sources. Adding GPS coordinates means we can create dictionaries on the fly for where you happen to be physically on the island. Now, this could have big applications in education and teaching of Sasak in the schools. When the Lalu Azhar, the Menak, was struggling with producing educational materials, he obviously couldn't produce materials for 263 schools. Well, we now can potentially do that for the lexicon and for the grammatical materials. Thanks for your attention.